Xin chào.
Chuẩn bị số.
Mingalawa.
Ni hao.
Selamat siang.
Sabai di tuần sau.
Assalamualaikum.
Selamat pagi.
Magandang umaga.
Welcome to the Lotus Talks. Hi, let me introduce myself. I'm Granger Whitelaw, CEO of the Vietnam Group, and I host the Lotus Talks. Along with my co-podcaster Cameron Lynch and various members of our team from time to time. The Lotus Talks is a show where we talk about the people and the companies that are making a difference in Vietnam and Southeast Asia. Or doing good while doing well, as I like to say. It's the golden age here, and there are many exciting things happening. I hope to bring as much to you as possible. So get your coffee, sit back, and relax. And let's go! Good morning. It's Granger Whitelaw with Lotus Talks. Today, we have the honor of meeting with a friend of mine and someone who I admire very much in Vietnam, who has started a phenomenal company, a very environmentally conscious person, Vincent Maru of Maru Chocolate. Vincent, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you doing, Granger?
I'm great, man.
Thanks for having me here.
It's great to have you here.
Yeah. It's a sunny day in Saigon.
It is. It's a sunny day.
Another one.
So you're a little sore today from your workout on Saturday, I hear.
Yeah, I was roped into this hardcore, you know, circuit training thing blindly. You say, didn't know how intense it would be.
And oh, right.
Now being completely without the facilities of my arms. You realize how much you actually do need your arms.
Yeah, you can't see him right now, but he's very relaxed,
Yeah. Which
is good. We like that you're relaxed.
So. Even in the modern day digital age, you still need your arms for certain
You need
things.
Your arms. You need your arms typing and answering all those mobile phone calls and mixing chocolates.
And mixing chocolate, yeah.
Well, what a fabulous company you have. You know, it's so funny that we met as friends just randomly out there in the world. I had eaten your chocolate. I heard about it, and I'd seen the packaging and some of the marketing. I was like, wow, that's really cool, you know? And then I met you, and I was like, wow, you created all this. So I want to hear all about that today.
Oh, wow, I hope you have enough tape.
So what made you, well, you're American, but you're French-American.
Yeah, so my parents moved to the U.S. for my father to do his research. I wasn't born there, but we were naturalized in around 2001. And so now I have dual nationalities.
Well, that's cool.
So, yeah.
So what made a French-American like you leave a Hollywood lifestyle to come live in Hanoi, Ho Chi Minh, and Vietnam?
So, for me, I spent many years working in film in L.A., and then I went into advertising, and so I did about 16 years in that business, and I left at a high point, knowing that pretty much I needed to do something else. I felt
change, time for change.
I needed a change, and I wanted to reinvent myself.
Get out of Hollywood.
Yeah, I wanted to get out, and first of all, I wanted to see the world. Mm. I had been so caught up in all these projects over the years that And the fact that, you know, for me, my free time was spent going back to France, seeing family.
Sure.
I hadn't seen that much of the world.
That's a hard thing, right? You know, when you live in a foreign country, you tend to take vacations back at home, and sometimes you don't actually get to enjoy the country or the nearby countries where you live.
Absolutely. So. Yeah. For example, in all those years in Los Angeles, I never really went to Mexico.
So to Mexico.
Fascinating country.
Right.
Especially now that I'm in chocolate, because, you know, Mexico has good cacao. And historically is important for cacao. Because it was kind of like the cacao started in the Amazon, and then went through Latin America, and then it stopped in Mexico.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. I had no idea.
It's like the northern limit.
Because I think of cacao, and I think the great cacao sorry, areas of the world, maybe Peru in the mountains, right? I have a friend who brought back coffee beans from the mountains of Peru and cacao, and he started to make some chocolate as well. It's for fun, but you know that area I think of, but I don't think of Mexico. So that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean the Tabasco region of Mexico has cacao.
Is that right?
Yeah, and the Yucatan, Peninsula.
See, I love doing these podcasts. I learn something every time. So yeah, it's exciting.
Well, that was what's exciting about reinventing myself.
Right.
And then in chocolate was, man, there was this whole new world.
Right. How did you pick chocolate? I mean, I love chocolate.
In a way, I think it picked me. No, I mean, my earliest memories with chocolate stem back from my childhood in France with my grandmothers. One liked white chocolate and the other one liked dark chocolate. And those were just incredible moments
of right.
my childhood. So they were just filled with good things. And when I left the entertainment world, I wanted to really kind of do something that was, to me, I don't know, more satisfying. I felt that it was a bit lacking for me in that world. So in this new endeavor, I wanted to kind of do something that was complete with my values.
And yeah.
Actually, so I wanted to do something.
Value alignment and create something for yourself. Give something back, maybe?
Yeah, I think so. I think when you're aligned with your values, you are probably giving something back
yeah.
one way or another. And yes, so I wanted to do something that was going to be good for people and make people happy. I just wanted
that's cool.
to give something that, and the thing is, chocolate is extraordinary for that. I mean, there are very few people that don't like chocolate.
Right, right.
And a great number of people, it just brings a smile to their face.
Yeah.
And maybe memories like I also had. And so, I mean, I've always enjoyed chocolate through my
so life. So did you watch Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory when you were a boy?
That book.
Oh, you read the book.
No, so the book is what really marked me, actually. Yeah, it was in second grade. And we were basically reading the book, and that story really marked me. And in that, there was this whole thing with poverty, and right. this child, you know, was going through, and you know, sharing a bed with his grandfather and everything. It really marked me. And
all right, it's profoundly, an amazing story, profoundly. Right? Yeah, yeah, for me too. I remember the blonde-haired, blue-eyed little boy in the movie, and I, yeah. you know, I was like, God, kid looks like me. I had really golden blonde hair and blue eyes when I was a boy. And they were so poor, and you know, but he was honest, and you know, the storylines, the themes throughout the whole movie are really amazing for a young kid to learn too. Their values, it's a value driven film if you think about it, right?
Yeah.
And Gene Wilder, what an amazing yeah. actor! Oh Absolutely. My God, I just cannot believe the talent that man had.
Yeah, he's a great, he's one of the greats.
So, what was one of the best projects you did in Hollywood?
Well, I think my swan song was probably one of the best. I worked on Solaris with Steven Soderbergh.
Oh, Solaris, yeah.
yeah. And that was my last project in editing and before going off to direct and produce commercial
movies. Right, right.
But that was an incredible experience. And in a way, I'm still part of the family.
You stay in touch with Soderbergh?
Yeah, and they some have come here.
Oh, good.
You know, his old production design.
I mean, he's like one of the eccentric, brilliant guys in Hollywood for sure, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. He hasn't been here yet, although I know he's working on a Vietnam project.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, it's in early stages. But
Spike Lee was just here.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, he was filming.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow, well, let's talk about a little Maru. So you met your partner, Samuel Maruta.
Maruta, yeah.
Maruta, Maruta. And how did you guys meet?
So we met in the jungle. We were both part of a weekend survival outing that was run by a former French Foreign Legion commander, jungle specialist.
That's
and
cool.
he was running these weekend outings. And so I was in Vietnam, and, you know, went in Rome, you know. Just see what this world is.
Well, it's part of your reinventing yourself and seeing the world, right?
And trying new things. And yeah. So this idea of the jungle fascinated me. And I didn't know anyone. I actually saw the posting on Facebook and replied to it and signed up. And there were 10 of us. And one of the people was Samuel. And we got to know each other
sure.
then. And then, curiously, we would run into each other at the university. So we were both taking Vietnamese classes at the university in the mornings, and which was pretty cool, actually.
Wow, that's cool. Do you speak
intensive? No, very little, very little. Unfortunately, once we started Maru, kind of dropped the learning of the language. Well, you know, you get staff, and you know, good staff, and they they want to help you out, and so things go much.
So you guys met, you started talking, and you thought, hey, let's make chocolate.
Yeah.
That was just a conversation over a beer, or?
Yeah, so, you know, well, we met in the jungle, and we ran into each other at the university, and then we had a conversation one night while we were involved in a charity outing. And I turned on and said, so what have you been up to lately? He's like, oh, I'm getting involved with this new thing, I'm getting involved with this company, trying to help them out with their books and things. And I was like, oh, in what? He's like, oh, in cacao. I was like, oh, that's funny. I'm also researching cacao. So I had started researching cacao because, I don't know, a couple of weeks before then, a friend of mine, on our way to the beach, there was like a van full of us, and he was passing around chocolate. And he was like, Vincent, you're always looking for ideas. You know, because people knew I wanted to find something and start something new in Vietnam. And so he told me, well, there's cacao in Vietnam. Why don't you make chocolate with it?
Yeah.
And I said, well, that's amazing. I didn't know that. I knew about coffee, and I knew about lots of other commodities and products and, you know, agricultural products from Vietnam, but not cacao. And that just really just,
wow,
the bells went off. And so I started researching immediately. And then a couple of weeks later, I ran into Sam again at this event. And that's kind of where, that was the first seed was planted. And then we just kind of kept in touch over the months, 2-3 months, just sharing information. And then one day he invited me over for a drink at his house. I met his wife, his kids. And I told him that I wanted to go the next day to see a cacao farm. I hadn't done that yet. I was trying to go through the official channels, and in Vietnam that was very slow and wasn't going anywhere.
Interesting.
So I decided, you know what, I'm just gonna get on my motorbike.
Is this the famous bean hunting trip?
Yeah.
So, heard about?
So the next day we went on the motorbikes, we had a map. We had a name of an area to find where there was some cacao, which on that trip it was Barria province. And we went on our motorbikes, and we were, you know, what was funny is we were scouring the sides of the road looking for cacao. And once in a while, we'd see something that looked like it. We'd stop. Like, oh, no, it's coffee. I mean, that's how novice we were.
Yeah, I don't even know the difference. Yeah, so, I mean, hardly, you know. I do.
The leaves kind of look the same.
Yeah, how would you know?
One's darker, one's, you know, shinier, and right. One's more of a bush than a tree. Coffee's more of a bush than a tree.
Okay.
But anyway, to us then, it was... enough for us to stop.
Sure.
So it was funny. And then we finally found this area, and we saw a sign that said Mua Hat Cacao. And so we went in, and it was the day before the Tet holiday. And it was, we arrived around 11:30 or so. So they had probably finished eating. It was really quiet. We walk up to this house, and we saw cacao drying. So immediately we went towards the drying beds. And then this this young gentleman comes out, and with this older man, and speak to him in our basic Vietnamese. And he spoke a bit of English. And we said, well, you know, we're fascinated with cacao. We're wondering, would you mind showing us what you do here?
Sure.
And he's like, oh yeah, no problem. So he gave us a little tour of the cacao farm, and then the fermentation and drying area. And we were thrilled. We were absolutely thrilled. So we bought 2 kilos in this yellow bag, and all of this is documented. So what's extraordinary with Maru as a project is everything in a way is documented.
Oh, that's cool.
It's we have all the photos from, you know, the first cacao hunting trip to the ensuing ones, to working with Sam in his kitchen, to making our first machines, to, you know, looking for a factory. I mean, all this stuff.
That's great.
It's extraordinary. So we should put out a book.
Well, I need to see some of those.
And pictures, Sam's a great writer.
I mean, the listeners are going to want to see some of those photos.
Yeah. So it's anyway. So it just gets just time.
Yeah, you'll have a history of Maru, and you can put them in the stores too for your patrons who come to Maison.
It's interesting because there's so many aspects in my life that are so undocumented,
yeah, right,
underdocumented. And then this is like day by day, play by play.
Well, that's awesome. So you met this farmer, and then how did you find the other farmers that you needed to Get the supplies for you, and today also. I
mean, right. So when we first started, we had 2 kilos, and then we didn't have any machines. So our first business trip, and as Sam calls it, like kind of a trip to see if we can actually tolerate each other, we went to Singapore, and we stayed in this really dumpy hotel because, you know, we didn't have much money. Right, you know, right. We're just starting this off, and we're like, it was like $50 a night in Singapore. That doesn't get you very far.
Right.
We learned. Anyway, so we spent one night, and we had an address where we could find this little grinder that's made in India. And the Indians use it to make dosa. Dosa is, masala dosa is like this batter they make. And it's made from chickpeas and lentils. And so that you grind it, you add water, makes a batter, and then they make this like very flat pancake with it.
Okay.
And then they stuff it with like potatoes.
Like a pizza.
It's delicious. Yeah, very thin. Like
very
a
thin.
More like a crepe. So yeah, we found this machine, and it gave it was the beginning. It was the quantum leap towards chocolate, because otherwise, if you just use a grinder,
right,
you know, or a blender, you create a coarse mass, which we had done. So the first time we made chocolate with Sam, we took his blender and we literally fried the motor because it was just too viscous, you know, for the motor.
How do you make chocolate? I mean, maybe I shouldn't hear this really, because
yeah. So I can I'll run it through you quickly.
Yeah. Let us know the process for making chocolate.
So basically, you buy the beans, you select the beans, you bring it back, and the first thing you need to do is roast it. So you put them in the oven. At home, you have
oven
in a tray, yeah. And then you roast it, and you roast it for anywhere from 25 to 30, 40, 45 minutes.
Okay.
You have to get to know the bean, because each bean is different.
And have you different flavors, each bean?
So yeah, you develop the chocolate notes while you're roasting.
Sure, of course.
And you're getting rid of also of some acidity and things like that. So you roast, and then what happens is the shell around the cacao bean puffs out, and then you need to crack to remove the shell from the cacao pieces, or nibs. So
they're called nibs.
Nibs. Yes, yeah.
Like a nibble. Nibs.
Okay. Yeah.
Nibs. Nibs of cacao.
Nibbles. Nibbles. And then you place those in a grinder. So the traditional cacao grinding machine is a stone wheel on a stone bed that's spinning. And kind of like what they use to crack wheat.
Sure.
In the old days with horses, but you know, smaller for chocolate. And the one we have is miniature, literally. It's about maybe
today
15 inches in diameter.
Today, still?
No.
No, that was
although then. We went on from 15, I'll speak in inches, or and then 50, to maybe 45-inch machine spinning with stone wheels on a stone bed.
So you still use the stone wheel and the stone bed?
Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
However, we have also a new setup. So we use both today.
Yeah.
We use both. We use this kind of older style, which is nice, but it doesn't give you some of the controls that you like to have.
The modern technology.
Yeah. So the new process gives you more control.
Yeah.
Maybe less poetry, but more control.
So how was the taste the first time you used the proper grinder? And I can talk about coffee a bit, because I do know coffee grinding and making coffee and preparing coffee. And the type of grinder and the way you grind and the thickness of the grind makes a big difference in the espresso and the coffee you make. So same with cacao, I would imagine. When you make the paste, you want it to be
absolutely consistent. So you want to be roughly around 20 microns in particle size. So cacao bean has two major parts. It has the solid material and the butter, the fats, right? So cacao bean is 50% cacao butter. So, and then you have 50% solid. So the solid, and what's interesting in the cacao bean is that the oil is trapped in the cell structure of the solid material.
Is that right?
So you need to grind this thing. It's not like peanuts. Peanut, you
it
grind.
It separates it?
And it becomes oily quickly.
Right.
Cacao, you really have to grind to release the butter.
Right. And do you catch the butter separately? Do you separate them?
No. In the simple method, you just grind it. And what happens is it becomes a paste.
I got you. Okay.
but the solid material's still coarse.
Right.
And you keep grinding and grinding and grinding, you add a bit more pressure, and then you get and it raises the cacao liquid. As you get, it gets finer and finer. And then you get to your 20 micron. At 20 micron, it's very smooth.
Okay.
And so the butter's still in there, the solid material.
Now, is that your chocolate, or do you have to do something after that? You've baked
it's almost your chocolate, and then you add your sugar, right? And then you grind, you continue grinding with your sugar.
Now, the type of sugar you add must make a massive difference in the taste of the chocolate, right? Yes.
So in the very beginning, we thought we wanted to make the purest chocolate possible, natural, pure, you know.
Would that be like authentic. 98% cacao or 95%?
Well, yeah, of course. The pure would have no sugar.
I've had that at Trader Vic's or something. I went and they had this chocolate, and it was, they have like 90 or 95% cacao or something. I don't know. There's different ratings and tastes.
So this quest for...
I like milk chocolate.
Yeah.
Like Hershey's, the worst stuff, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, Hershey's, they've mastered it.
Like Velveeta American cheese. That's the only cheese I eat. I don't eat any other cheese. Terrible, right? I don't know. It's my waspy upbringing. I don't know.
Yeah, so we want to make this really authentic chocolate, which means that you're selecting the finest cacao, and you're using the purest sugar. So if you use like a brown sugar, for example, what's going to happen, and we had to learn this by doing, what happens is the impurities in the sugar that make it have that nice caramel, deep flavor, actually is going to suffocate the cacao. And cacao is a noble ingredient in chocolate, not sugar, for some.
Sure.
Maybe not for Hershey's. But
I've heard you.
But, for us, and so... What happened is we were making a pretty interesting chocolate. It was good, but had this huge caramel note.
Yeah.
It was like so caramel. It was like, whoa, where's... Okay. But it wasn't that interesting. And then we went to Hong Kong for the first time. This is 4 months into starting the project.
Sure.
With some chocolate that we had molded in a cake tin and wrapped in like foil with a little name tag on it. And we went to Hong Kong for this food show, just to see the food show. And maybe we'll meet some people that they can tell us how we're doing with our chocolate. And so we show up at this thing and we see this guy manning his stand, like someone at a state fair, you know?
Right.
You know, here, come here, you know, I have the world's greatest chocolate made, you know, was made 100 years ago, and he has his 30 people, you know, standing in front of him.
The soapbox,
And we're like, Jesus, who is this guy?
Right.
And anyway, his name is Willie Harcourt Cruz, and his company is called Willie's Cacao.
Oh, okay.
And he's a friend now. He's a really, really cool guy.
Is he like the chocolate sommelier?
Yeah. I mean, he was an early in the game in the whole bean to bar movement, which is kind of this chocolate movement that was created in the late 90s and really took off around 2010. So anyway, we went up to him after his presentation, and we presented ourselves, and you know, we make chocolate in Sam's kitchen in Vietnamese cacao.
Tale.
Of course, he didn't know there was cacao growing in Vietnam. The world really didn't know that. And he's like, well, do you have some with you? And we're like, yeah, of course. So we take this block of chocolate out of our pocket and unwrap it in front of him, you know, nervously. And he bites into it, looks at us, and he's like, let me tell you, I think I know what you're doing. And you're trying to use the rawest sugar because you think that's really great. And we're like, yeah. And he's like, however, what it's doing is it's taking over the chocolate.
Yeah.
So, and I think you're using good beans. I know you're using good beans. If you were to go off of that raw sugar and go towards a more refined sugar, what it's going to do is it's going to let the cacao express itself.
Right.
And cacao is a noble ingredient. That's what you're spending the money on, not the sugar, but the cacao. And we're like, yeah, maybe. We're still, you know, a bit sure of ourselves. And and anyway, it really stuck with us. And that's the first thing we did when we got back to Saigon. We started getting off of this. And I don't think I would be here today if we hadn't taken that constructive piece of you know,
advice, really. Guidance.
And anyway,
well, how lucky you are to have met.
It really sprung us forward because it's, you know, you're only as good as your chocolate.
Sure. Right?
Like in Hollywood, you're only a director's only as good as their last film.
So now you have this great brand here, and you have obviously have had some good mentors and some lucky breaks, like we all need when we start companies, right? I mean, it's a lot of hard work, it's a lot of lucky breaks. And you built up a nice market here in Vietnam, and it's surprising, when I came to Vietnam, I am a major chocolate addict, right? I don't drink, I don't smoke, but I eat a lot of chocolate, as everyone knows. And I said to people, do Vietnamese like chocolate, sweets? Yeah. And I was told, well, they really don't like things that are too sweet, right? So it was interesting, when I had your chocolate, it was a little more bitter than what I was used to, right? But I'm told that is a flavor that the Vietnamese, and maybe Asians in general, really like more. So it perfectly makes sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, we made a chocolate that we liked. You know, we didn't make a product for the Vietnamese. We made a product to convince ourselves first, you know, as chocolate lovers. You know, we have a certain idea of what is good chocolate.
Sure.
I think... So that was the first thing, and I tell people that, you know, we talk about business and startups, and, you know, when you do something, and especially when you put your heart into it, you know, it's like, just do it. It's your project.
Oh, yeah,
it's your baby.
It.
Do
love
it for
it.
Yourself.
Right.
You know, and then if you do it for yourself, unless you're, you know, complete freak.
Bozo.
Complete marginal, you know. You know, just, you'll find some.
Sure.
Even free, you know, they'll find people to embrace what they're doing.
Right.
And we just believe that if we made a chocolate that we liked first, well, people will like it.
Yeah.
So that was really what we went forward with. And always, to be honest, that's in our product development, we have to be convinced first. Otherwise.
But you have different flavors, almost a couple different ones. I don't know all your lines of chocolate, but I know and I've heard that you have cacao from different areas in Vietnam and different areas around that actually have different flavors, maybe a little different texture in the mouth, kind of like a wine coming from different parts of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was actually something we kind of brought to the world of chocolate, this idea of terroir in one country.
Of terroir. Terroir.
Which is the wine term, which means that the place where the grapes are grown are affected by the soil, the climate,
like Napa or Sonoma
different
or Chile.
Absolutely. So that really has a big effect on taste.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were starting, we went to Barria first, but then quickly we had beans that we were finding from different provinces, and the chocolate was just radically different.
Really?
And its own character. And so that was amazing.
That is amazing.
So
for a small country to have radically different tastes from just 50 miles away.
Yeah, and we were like, wow, this is so when it came time to deciding on, okay, what are we gonna release to the world? You know, what's our line of chocolate gonna be about? Well, that was the most interesting thing. And no one had done that before. So we were like, wow, let's do this, you know. So the first line of chocolates, we call them the origin bars. Represent six provinces within the south of Vietnam. So each one of those provinces has a distinctive taste.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we have the Mekong Valley origins, which is the Benche and Tien Yang, and those have a different profile than the highland ones, which is Dak Lak and Lam Dong. Different soil types, different... slightly different climates.
Yeah. The climate from South Mekong to Dak Lak to Hanoi, that you get a lot of climate change and difference for sure. Yeah. And topography, so I could see the difference in the farming and the ground.
Well, one is, just very basically, you know, you have the Mekong is sediment soil.
Yeah.
You know, it's a delta, a river delta.
Sure.
A lot of that. And then as you go towards Dak Lak, it's more and more volcanic soil, mountainous.
Hmm.
So that brings another...
Any different minerals on the ground and affecting it.
Absolutely.
Amazing.
So we were like, you know, this is exciting. Because before, what people were doing, they were saying, well, you know, a Venezuelan cacao and a cacao from Ivory Coast.
Right.
They're very different. Well, first of all, there are two different varieties.
Yeah.
And then you have to, you know, cross an ocean. You would think they would be different.
Yeah, legit. That's so amazing. And do you think that's unique to Vietnam, really, because of the way the shape of it is and just the climate here, et cetera? Do you think that's unique to this area that you could get varietals like that? I'll call them varietals because it makes me sound fancy, but different varieties or tastes?
Yes, to answer it first, yes and no. Because yes, in the sense that it's different. Vietnam, the soil types and everything are unique to here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they give a certain taste to the Vietnamese cacao. No, in the sense that every cacao growing country, like Colombia, has different areas as well.
Sure.
You know, they have more, some that are more coastal, some are more inland, less mountainous. So they also have their you know,
varietals.
Right. Differences in terroir.
Right.
So it's so
terroir. Yeah,
so but it was no, but we were the first to kind of bring that out.
Yeah,
which was fun. As Frenchmen,
so cool.
It was cool. We were like, you know, influenced by wine, and then you find this in cacao. And you're not forcing it. I mean, it's you don't have to be a chocolate expert to realize that they don't taste the same.
Well, no, you can see your face right now, but it's clear that it's exciting to you.
Yeah.
And you are a Frenchman and I know you love your wine and that's kind of why I'm playing that, you know, off on that varietals and things, because it is a bit like that. You have different tastes in wine where they're grown. So it seems that people would really be attracted to that. And it's a great story. I mean, it's a wonderful story from a marketing standpoint and from a positioning standpoint, because this is a business, right? I mean, it's something you love, but it's become a big business now. And now you're overseas in the United States. And I would love to hear a bit about that. You're in the U.S. Are you in Hong Kong? Are you in Singapore? Have you really branched out? And are you continuing to do that?
Yeah, of course. I mean, we export to about 20 countries today.
20 countries?
Yeah.
Wow.
We originally, in the business plan, we knew we needed export. Vietnam was not the same country as it is today.
Uh-huh.
The middle class really hadn't taken its full, made itself really present. And so the buying power wasn't really there, wasn't to be seen at least.
And that was years ago.
And this was in 2010, 2011.
Yeah, yes.
So we knew we needed to make a great product, but that we would need export. However, we wanted to be present in Vietnam. We wanted to be part of the community. And we wanted to share what we were doing with everyone.
Sure.
Not just export it. So, but we knew we had to put focus.
So you're in 20 countries. What's the number one country for
USA
sales?
Today.
USA?
Yeah. The US is number one.
Is that right? Now, where do you sell in the US? If I went to the United States, where would I find you? In California or New York?
New York, you can go to Dean and DeLuca, have some of our chocolate.
Wow, that's a nice shop, Dean and DeLuca.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and you can go to some specialty shops like Cacao in Manhattan.
So high-end specialty shops, maybe resorts.
Concept stores. As well. Coffee shops.
Uh-huh.
Different.
And where does Vietnam fall in that? U.S. is number one. Vietnam is where?
So Vietnam, as far as sales today, is number one. So interesting thing is, three years ago, everything flipped.
But international, USA is number one.
International. For export, USA is number one.
Oh, great.
It used to be, 3 years ago, everything changed. Everything, I think what happened is in Vietnam, you had the tourism boom. You had the middle class just becoming more interested in new things.
Yeah.
We also started our own shop, Maison Maru. Which is more than a shop, but anyway.
In Ho Chi Minh.
So
all of a sudden, beautiful place. It's quite an experience. If you haven't been to Mesa Maru, it's in Bintan, D1, Bintan district.
It's Bintan Market.
Bintan Market, right? Yeah. I don't speak this language as well as you do, but and it's a wonderful little place, really. Yeah. If you haven't been, you have to go see this place.
Yeah, we're proud of that. The idea with Maison Maru is it's a complete chocolate experience. We actually make chocolate from the beans in the shop, so people can see it being roasted. We have the Indian grinders.
Those are beautiful. Yeah.
We're making pastries, fine French-style pastries, but very chocolate-oriented.
Sure.
And we use only local ingredients. So all the fruits, nuts, spices have to be found in Vietnam for us to use it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So it's we really embrace the idea that we are here, and we want to use that as a strength.
Sure,
more than a limitation.
It's a beautiful thing being from Vietnam. I think it's a beautiful country, and so much positive to talk about and push that into your brand and through your brand and communicate that in the chocolate. It's fabulous. You know, you were talking to me the other day when we ran into each other, and I said, hey, I want to come see the Willy Wonka chocolate factory, the Maru factory.
Yeah, yeah.
And you kind of chuckled and said, well, okay, Granger, but it's a bit different now than it used to be, right?
Yes.
So, you know, I mean, years ago, obviously, you had said to me you would go around and every morning say hello to your staff and smile and shake hands and have a coffee, maybe taste a bit of chocolate.
Yeah.
And today, you have to put on basically a hazmat outfit, like you're in a clean room at Microsoft looking at a new chip or something being designed and look through windows. It's really lost some of that intimacy for you because you've really grown so much. So.
Absolutely.
Tell me about that. No, that seems like a new challenge.
I mean, those are challenges because what happens is you have this, you're very artisanal in the beginning. You know, you only have a few employees. You know, obviously you're following hygiene standards, but it's different when you grow and you have to put these safeguards in place.
Well, you have to be FDA qualified or something.
Or, you know, the FDA has come through. We've grown, we've matured. Yeah. You know, now we're as far as the FDA is concerned, we're in with the big boys, and girls. So it's like
How exciting is that? 7 years.
So it's been 7 years, and it's a whole different thing. So the thing is, it's not like okay, well, we can't do this. It's how do we bring that back?
Yeah,
in a different way. So we have to, you know, have the changing rooms and all these things and. You know,
but bring back that artisanal, it's almost like reinventing the chocolate like you did yourself 14 years ago when you came here, right?
So what we do now is we put even more emphasis on our staff, bringing them into the chocolate experience, what they're doing.
Mm.
What makes it that what they're doing is important for Maru or, you know, or for the taste of that chocolate.
Sure.
The employees, you know, we do sensory analysis training. You know, we do a lot more training on the idea of, you know, chocolate,
hands-on,
you know, history, the different varieties of chocolate, making them taste chocolates from other parts of the world, just to bring in this soul you kind of gets taken out when everything's aseptized to a T, you know, which is fantastic for production, but you know, as a company, having company culture and the soul and the kind of bring, you know, so we're finding ways to bring that back.
So that's, to me, sounds like a lot of education and experiential kind of activity going on inside the R&D, inside of your company. But you know, I sit here and think to myself, a comment you made earlier, come to Maison Maru and see us make the chocolate, but boy, what a great opportunity you have to be able to really teach people, right? Teach people en masse. You could have a school or classes or join with them on how to make chocolate. And
we've been doing it. Maison Maru is a great forum now because we have a dedicated space for teaching.
For
chocolate tasting classes.
Perfect.
We're going to have our pastry classes with Chef. You know,
so those are starting this year?
Starting very soon. This year.
Oh, that's so cool.
So we're going to have people, you know, that's going to be on pastries and chocolate making. But what we've been doing for the past year at Mizomau in the dedicated room, which we can't do at the factory, is bring people in and teach them about chocolate.
Play.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, and then just, you know, and it's, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
That's awesome. You can sign me up, please, for the first class and Raisa. We'll gladly come and we'll be in those classes.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know Raisa will be there. She loves to bake.
Yeah, front row.
Right, front row. Always front row. Oh, that's awesome. So now you are here in Vietnam, and how about your personal life? I know you have a beautiful girlfriend, Maggie, who is also an entrepreneur and starting her Cocoa Religion business, and maybe we'll bring her, talk to her someday here. But, you know, how is that going? How are you enjoying, you know, kind of the social part of Vietnam?
Well, yeah, I mean, Maggie's fantastic. We have a lot of fun. She's also, as you said, she's an entrepreneur. And she's has a wonderful brand called Coconut Religion, mm-hmm. Which is also very values-based and very attractive, I mean, to have.
Just, yeah, it's cool. She's always out there working hard.
She found a missing a space, a gap within this kind of natural beauty product world. And so it's really cool. I mean, Vietnam is a social place. It's one of the reasons why I stayed here when I first came to Vietnam, is I realized that it's really easy to have access to people. People here live spontaneously, and expats as well. So not just the Vietnamese and their way of life, but also I think it's just expats are influenced by that. And you know, we're in the tropics, things are pretty laid back.
That's true.
It's a very hectic city, but it's not a stressful city.
Right.
And people, you know, I think they make a choice. And before, Vietnam was not the, you know, as a friend of mine who was pretty elitist would say, it's not a, you know, it's not an A-list city.
Yeah.
It used to be a B-list, C-list city, you know, anyone in banking wasn't their first choice or whatever, but it was like, if you didn't care about that and you were more drawn towards adventure or a country that was up and coming, then Vietnam was a gold mine, you know? So I was really drawn by the access to people and the community that was in a city of 9-10 well now they say 12 million. It felt like a village,
and it still has that. Well, that's neat. You found a friend to run around with, a wonderful girl, and you guys are both building your businesses, and it seems like you just have lots going on. And I know you just celebrated your 50th birthday.
47.
47th birthday.
Yeah, okay.
So that was
holding
fun.
On to that.
You had a big surprise party for that. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no. So yeah, so Maggie did an incredible job of organizing and tricking me organizing a weekend in Kandao and organizing a surprise party there.
Right, right.
Which I fell into hook, line, and sinker. So that was. Right.
Now, did I hear there are people walking on the plane who are coming to the surprise party and they had covered their faces and these are good friends of yours and you did not recognize them and you had no idea that this was going on? They flew to combat with you. You had no idea. You got off the plane, you got your bags, and it wasn't until one of your friend's kids showed up behind you or something. And
yeah, so very interesting. We rushed to the airport. Maggie had forgotten her makeup bag, which in hindsight, you're like, well, was that a foil, you know?
Right.
But no, you know, it was just, it created another layer of
drama,
drama to the whole, you know, getting to Kandao part. And so we were just trying to get on the plane.
Right.
And
your mind was
of course, elsewhere. My friends were like hiding, like disguising themselves with whatever they had. So they wouldn't be seen. And on the small, you know, prop plane, there was a friend of ours, Bianca, who's a tall German woman, you know, and these tiny planes and walking right in front of us while I was explaining to Maggie the difference between a jet engine and a prop. You
know? Right, right, right.
So it's like...
Because she's setting you up and trying to distract you too.
Exactly. So it's so she was distracting me by saying, oh, I don't know, what is it?
That's funny.
So anyway, did not realize it anything until we got to the hotel. And at that point, I was really in shock. I was really,
when you saw her,
I can be quite gullible.
Yeah. That's funny.
You get me good.
Wow. Well, it sounds like you have left the Hollywood lifestyle, and if you sought out for adventure and to reinvent yourself and explore the world, you have checked each of those boxes, made some wonderful friends, and have a great business. You are a blessed man. So,
absolutely. I hope my business partner also feels. No,
I'm sure he does.
You know, so, one of the things in this story is, you know, meeting Sam. I think, you know, I had tried to create a business years before in Paris, small record label, and the project was amazing. It was a great project. But I made a mistake with it,
right,
the business partner. And I think that, you know, with Sam, it was really an incredible encounter. And one of the first things the first conversation we ever had was about our values. And we realized we were aligned. We wanted to do the same thing. Of project. I really encourage any entrepreneur who's going to be, you know, teaming up with someone just to have that conversation. What is it that you really want to do?
Right.
I mean, is it going to be a bit bottom line business? Is it going to be a value based business? Can be both, whatever, you know, how you want to do it.
Sure.
With who, you know, what kind of growth you want, is you want to, you know, exit plan after 5 years, or keep doing this,
and make sure your children. You don't want to jump into a marriage, really, with somebody, and then have to get divorced. I mean, you want to make sure you really set those values and the ideas out.
So
I was going to ask you, you know, what life lesson have you learned living here and in the past 7 years? But I think you're telling us right now that
absolutely that's fundamental, because without that and that, and then of course it's. There was a friendship. There was a genuine respect for each other and what that person wants in their life, out of their life, and so on. So business is not everything.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, obviously.
I mean, that's rare. You can get the blend of that, right? The friendship and the business and everything that can come together like you guys have.
Yeah.
That is really beautiful. I mean, you're truly blessed. So at Lotus Talks, we always want to chat with business people who are not just doing well, but that are giving back and doing good.
Yeah.
And I know that you have a huge heart and you're trying to think of ways to help out. Is there any charity right now that you want to mention? Anything that you're trying to do individually or that you'd like to see or be a part of going forward to help Vietnam?
Well, for us, first of all, I think when you have a company, the first thing you can do is give to your staff.
Yeah.
Right? Give that environment your first.
Create the culture.
Your priority.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really how you can affect any change.
Yeah.
It's creating an organization, you know, and defining it, you know, to, in a way of giving back or respecting and whatnot. So that's the first sphere, you know, and then the second sphere is a community around that. So, yes, we are very involved in the community. The first thing is with the farmers. You know, farmers are our main partners. We wouldn't be anything without that relationship. So always making sure that is a win-win relationship. And that's something that's also, you know, resonating, if you will, in their community, because it also affects other people. So, and then of course you get involved in certain actions and things. So we are very involved in many charities, sponsoring and things like that, and even I believe sports is a good way to motivate people out of certain situations.
Yeah, team building and growth. And I see you sponsoring a lot of things. You do a lot of charity events and it's not just one, you do lots of different things. So I think it's emblematic of kind of the value you have, is which is spread it through the community, spread it through your organization, spread the love, spread the values and build everywhere you go.
And
right?
By example, I think, you know, you can give money to a charity, but if you're not actually doing it yourself, doesn't mean much. So, you know, this care for the environment is first, obviously, we work with our farmers, and we're, you know, we've set up a cacao project as well, where we've planted cacao, so doing it that in a very responsible, organic,
sure,
sustainable way. And also, you know, in our shops, the idea of removing plastic and, you know, single-use plastic, and to really kind of, it's a big, big issue in Vietnam.
Yeah, it's big right now.
You go to the beaches, you see it all.
Oh, goodness. Everywhere.
The debris,
yeah.
And so, in the streets and all that. Yeah. So, you know, what's our impact? You know, and I think for Maru, it's, the idea is always have a positive impact. No matter what we do, you know.
Positive impact.
We, yeah. I mean, you know, it could be a negative impact, right?
No, it's I think that's a great statement. Everything we do, we want to have a positive impact. I mean, that is truly, I think, part of everything you've said today about your values and what you're trying to do,
yeah,
all the way through everything you do. And that's really, that's amazing, you know. And I'm not sure everyone really takes the time to think about that and really live that way. They want to say they do, but I know at Maru you are, and yeah, and you as a person are. So I congratulate you. So, Vincent, thank you so much for coming today. It's been wonderful to talk to you. I definitely want to come by and see the shop sometime.
Yeah.
Well,
I got to give you, because you've been there, but I haven't given you.
Right. I need a personal tour.
Yeah.
And then the Greg, a friend of yours, told me about.
And the factory. We'll go to the factory.
I want to go to the factory.
We'll get suited up.
Yeah, I got to do that.
You know.
We're going to get pictures and we're going to put it on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You can go through that whole...
What's the bomb, the chocolate bomb you make?
Chocolate bomb.
It's a chocolate round...
The spread. The cacao spread.
Oh, the cacao spread.
Which is our version of a Nutella, if you will.
Oh, I need
it. It's much better.
Thank you so much for coming today, and I'm going to take you up on your offers.
Yeah, let's do it.
Thank you for listening. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on Buzzsprout, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and many other podcast platforms so you never miss an episode. If you want to support what we do, then share and leave a comment. You can always find us on our website at thevietnamgroup.com/thelotus, as well as our Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and just about everywhere in the world. Just search for The Vietnam Group. We post updates daily and feature the Lotus blog and podcasts. Until next time, the Lotus Talks. See you soon.